This is Talkish. I am Halle Kesser-Jane. The Halle Kesser-Jane Show is always available online at HalleKesserJane.com. Now, let's get to it. Up first on episode 314, my guest is Jennifer Palmieri, one of the most accomplished political and communication strategists in America today, and maybe one of the most powerful women in politics. Jennifer joins me at my table to talk about Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, election 2016, and deliciously candid, heart-wrenching new memoir, Madam President. And be sure to stick around for my commentary following my interview with Jennifer. Now, let's talk with Jennifer Palmieri. Jennifer Palmieri is one of the most accomplished political and communication strategists in America today. Jennifer served as head of communications for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign and White House communications director under President Barack Obama. She was also White House deputy press secretary for President Bill Clinton and national press secretary for the Democratic Party. She's currently president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund and has been a frequent contributor to the Washington Post and other national print outlets and is a frequent guest commentator on MSNBC news shows. In her new book, Madam President, a profound and deeply honest memoir of the 2016 presidential election, Palmieri uses her hard-earned experiences, won in a stellar career, to pen an empowering letter to the first woman president and, by extension, all women seeking positions of power. She aims to forge a new model of leadership that fully embraces their feminine qualities and demonstrates that women can best serve by being themselves. Let's talk with Jennifer Palmieri. All right, so listen to me. I'm not kidding. Jennifer, I'm going to say this proudly. And if I, what is that noise in the background? Wait a minute before we, what is that?
That was me putting bug lotion on. That was it. I got home. I have been on the road for a week and I'm home for about 5 hours before I have to leave for London. Okay.
enjoy your bug spray. Enjoy your bug spray.
Yeah.
All right. So let me go back to where I started. I'm going to keep this in because you're such a trip. All right. So I'm going to say this proudly. And if I sound shrill, Jennifer, I embrace it. Madam President made me cry.
Yay!
A lot. And I thought how ironic, since crying in women and Hillary Clinton is certainly a topic you address in your book. I mean, tears, so symbolic in the context of women in power, women seeking the highest office in the land. You need to talk to me, to talk to my audience about women, tears, crazy, right?
Yes. I'm a big crier and I am easily moved to tears when I'm talking about something that is important to me or... You know, this which happens a lot in the workplace. It happened a lot in the Obama White House. It happened a lot on the campaign. You know, and sometimes I just cry out of frustration or anger. That's how it's, you know, it's how you express emotion. And it really, it troubles me that it's still this thing that's considered verboten for a woman to do, because I think at the root of that is a test. And this notion that being a woman is something you have to overcome to be successful at work or in politics.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
Like that's what it's really about. That is, it is. You know, I was talking to somebody who cried at work, and she said it felt like she felt like I'd been exposed. You know, what's that about? She felt that she had. It's been revealed. You don't actually belong here. And I think that's what it's just this, it's an old vestige of, you know, if women can really fit into what had been a man's world. And but I also think that you should feel free to cry, because a lot of times people will say, like I've heard people say, I was going to say something, but I couldn't get through it without crying. And I think, wow, it's a shame we didn't get to hear that, because it was obviously something that really moved you, was really important to you, and people would have benefited from it. I think that, you know, no one looks at the world today and feels like we have all the answers, that we have all the right tools. I think we need to hear more from people, have them share more of themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, that would, and if you're going to shed a few tears when you do it, That's fine.
But there's something also sick in it all. It's like, remember when Hillary cried in New Hampshire in 08? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people were just like, oh, now she's human. We can see she. What do you mean? To cry is to be human?
I know.
I mean, it's just utterly bizarre. Bizarre.
But that was the thing with, you know, as often happens with Hillary, there's, you know, there's something unusual and unique to her, not unique to her, but unique to her situation. And it made me uncomfortable, the glee with which people received, watched her cry in New Hampshire. It was as if we have broken her. We have forced her to be human. And she cried in the 2016 campaign some. It was not as big of a deal when she did. Usually it was when, like a lot of women, it was when she was talking about something that was important to her. It was when she was talking about her mom, I think most often, or talking to mothers who had lost their children, that kind of thing. But it disturbed me how gleeful we were to see.
Made me crazy, absolutely crazy. You also shouting, you know, a woman dare not shout. But at the same token, you point out, and I think this is one of the powers of this book, is we are even running our women candidates as men.
Yes.
So we need to talk about that. That's crazy.
It is crazy, and it did not occur to me until very much towards the end of the campaign, in October probably of 2016, that I realized, I sort of had this epiphany that what we had done was presented Hillary as a female facsimile of the qualities that we look for in a male president. And it was a real gut punch because it made me think that in so doing, we were responsible for this notion, for the notion that people had that she was inauthentic, you know, that there was something about her they just didn't like, there was something about her they just didn't recognize. And we tried to jam her into this ill-fitting suit. And that's what, and it's a sort of fundamental flaw in the design, a fundamental flaw in our thinking that you'd have to go all the way back to square one to address. Mm. And I couldn't, and I couldn't even imagine how it would be different. And I still thought she was going to win at that point. I thought, wow, we have a lot of work and thinking to do when she is president to shake the old male model as being or just the only model we had for what a national leader looked like. And just, you know, because of circumstances is based on men. Yeah. And I think that the, you know, Hillary's generation, the baby boomers, had to prove that they could do the job just the same as a man, that it wouldn't be any different. And, you know, that's not good, right? You know what? Nothing will be different. Everything will be exactly the same. We don't want that.
You can't keep playing by their rules. I think the whole thing is really about, we're finally coming to understand, the rules need to be changed. We need to take control. That's the key, right?
And that is why I wrote the book, because I thought I was so inspired that after we lost, I thought women are going to, no woman's going to ever want to run for office again. no one's going to look at what Hillary went through and said, oh, that looks great. I think I'm going to try that. Right. But that's not at all what happened, that women, you saw as soon as the women's march, that what it proved to us was, yes, we are playing by an outdated set of rules, and it's on us to create a new set, to say we're playing our own game. We're saying what works for us from here on out. And, you know, I had friends in the Obama White House that would sort of bristle and say, you know, complain about how it was still a man's world. And I would get frustrated by that, because I thought, I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm able to succeed. I've been really fortunate to have these great, interesting jobs. And I just look at it differently now. I think, no, Jennifer, you were able to succeed in a man's world. That's different than remaking the world. That's different than imagining on your own what how you want to engage in politics or business and what you want that to look like.
I love that. I love that.
And yeah,
I
want to say,
that is. But I want to say the word ambition is at the core of all of this. Women, right. Thou shalt not be ambitious.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. No, I really think it is. I think there used to be more hurdles for women, right? You had to prove that the competency, particularly for the presidency, and ability to be commander in chief, you know, all these different aspects of the job. And people, even people who weren't going to vote for Hillary, thought, you know, the polling would show you this, that that they thought she could do all aspects of the job. She'd be the commander in chief. So that's progress. But it is, why does she want it? Sure, she can do it. Why does she want the job? And what's at the, what is at the root of that? And just, there is suspicion about a woman's motivation. We still don't quite, we still don't quite understand that. And I didn't necessarily expect that when we started the campaign. I didn't even think that it was going to be that hard to elect the first woman president. And I see things differently now. But what I failed to really process in the moment is, looking at it from a historical perspective, it's still a radical thing for a woman to be in charge. And the country's been around for 240 years. Politics has been around for many, many centuries. And it's only been in the last 100 years that women had any real role in it. We haven't even had the right to vote for 100 years. So when you look at it from that perspective, you think, right, okay, what we've done thus far is just prove that we can succeed in the man's world the way they do it. But, and that, you know, as, you know, the famous joke goes, that's like dancing in high heels backwards. Right? And like now we get to go forward and in any sort of footwear that we choose.
I hope you're right.
I think we have to do it. You have to do it yourself. You can't, you know, I think the other thing women have to stop doing is comparing, is judging ourselves by a male standard, or judging ourselves by whether or not they're giving us power. And, you know, that means, I've just made the decision to change my own mind about how I engage in the world. And, I'm making the decision to look at how I behave in the workplace and think, what is this? How am I behaving that is about what I want to do? And how much of this is what society is telling me a woman is supposed to do? And just throwing out the stuff that doesn't work for me.
Right.
And then you engage differently in the world, and the world reacts to you differently.
I think
it's the most empowering
thing
you can do.
Absolutely. Something that you say in the book, I really hadn't thought about it, but it's true. You said, I want to make a point that I made in Madam President. I'm quoting you. If the issue is whether a woman can win the American presidency, you say, depending upon how you keep score, a woman has already been elected to office. I love that. It's so true. She won the popular vote. And by the way, she beat Obama also by the popular vote. And if I'm not mistaken, who was it? Was it Carville who said the other day she's actually amassed more votes than anybody in, like, what? I mean, ever, in all the things that she's run for. I think we have to put that on
that's,
the mark.
That's a good point. That's true. That's true. She did. Right. Right, that's true. She won more votes than anybody ever had in a Democratic primary. But no, Obama got more votes than her in 12.
A popular vote?
Obama got more votes than her in one of the years, 8 or 12, I can't remember. But as I like to say, she had received more votes for president than any white man in history. So that we can say is true. That we can say is true. But
I'm not going to say that. I'm going to shout it.
It's so fun, right? Such a fun stat. But she proved it's possible, right? She proved that a woman can do this. And she did it, you know, she did it the old way. She did it backwards in high heels,
half her humanity
tied behind her back, because she had to prove that she could hit all the same marks that a man would. So that is, you know, any number of things could have gone differently where she actually would have been the first woman president.
Right.
And
well,
I don't think the boy. There's many numbers of many factors that
absolutely
could have gone differently.
Something I do want to say to you, though, is one of the things that really absolutely blew me away, and by the way, still does.
Yes.
Is the amount of women, who didn't get any of this, who they're the ones who more than anybody wanted to see her reduced to tears, or said, "Why don't like her?" Or, I mean, what's with women? Oh my God, that's part of the story cannot grab.
So, gender bias isn't gender bias, is my view, right?
Okay.
Right. We all hold these sort of models in our head, and I think, you know, and again, it's not, I don't feel that it's because men and women are all trying to hold women back, but stuff is still new to us. And I think what we found with someone with Hillary in particular, the more she accomplished, the further removed she became from their own experience, and they just couldn't relate to her. You'd hear a lot of, a lot of women would say, you know, they might admire her, but they would think, I can't be like her. I'm not as accomplished as her. I'm never going to be as smart as her. I'm never going to be Secretary of State. And it made her harder for people to relate to.
I also think let me throw this out at you. I also think that the Cinderella principle, remember that one? We're all looking for Prince Charming. I think that's alive and kicking in America today. And that makes her that more threatening, or any woman who goes for a different avenue.
A different, right. Yes. Not going to make it on her own way and not saved.
Right. Right. And I think that's something that we need to address in American female society today. That's not being addressed. It's kind of swept under the rug. Your thoughts, maybe.
Yeah, that is. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think that there is a element, and there's an element of that, because I think you don't want it to be so hard that it's all on yourself.
Right.
And that's what that's telling you, that no one is going to come and save you. No one's going to come rescue you. But the great news is you can rescue yourself, and you always have been able to do that. And that's how you saw a lot of women react in response to the election. They're like, well, this is on me. And they're marching, they're running for office, they're calling out offenses through Me Too. And it is, I mean, I felt in the first, I described the morning after we lost as waking up in a new universe.
Oh, we did.
I wanted everybody to, I feel like a lot of people felt that way, so I wanted them to recognize that. And it's always scary change is scary, and it's scary when you wake up in a world you don't recognize and you desperately want something familiar. And that's how I felt for a while. But eventually I realized, I don't know, I like myself better now. I feel like more solid in this world. I feel like I kind of understand. Yeah, I understand. So you understand, it's more clear what we're up against, and it's more clear what we need to do. And there's no choice. Either you accept that women are only supposed to go so far, or you know it's in your power to change it. And I know it's in my power to change it. And so I wrote a book about it, right?
Right. Interesting. Women
I still long for, I miss the notion of, I know how things are going to turn out, right? That's really, it was a bigger part of my well-being than I understood. But I think this is it. You see, there's a lot more work to do, but the payoff could be bigger than I had imagined once you understand that the power to change is within yourself.
So I want to talk about you for a minute. You fascinate me. Do you hear me? I mean, you know, this book is out there and everybody's asking you about Hillary and the campaign. Mm-hmm. Kiddo, what about you? I mean, come on. Look at the life you've had. I mean, you.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Not crazy. It's brilliant. And you got to the top of the heap, my friend. The top of the heap. I don't think you get credit for it. I'm giving you a moment that. Because if you could do it, you could run for president. You could be anything you want to be. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter is you ran Barack Obama. Come on. People don't get just how extraordinary you have come. You come from a great family, too. And I want people to read this book because there's something in the book that will touch you all. And that's the story of, during all of this crazy in 2016, Jennifer's older sister, who she adored, was suffering from early onset Alzheimer's and was getting ready to leave the planet. And you went through all of that. Your family system, your close-knit family, I love this. Is that a part of the reason you are so successful? Because you're grounded in something so... It comes through, this love of your sisters in this book that just tore me apart.
I think that I have a very strong mother, and I have three older sisters. There were no boys. I never grew up with any sort of, any other model than all girls did whatever, you know, what it, there was no, there were no gender roles and there was no sense. I never had any sense that I couldn't achieve whatever I wanted. And the other thing is my family is a Navy family, so we moved a lot. So that made you, you got to be observant when that happens, and you have to be able to handle change, and you got to stick together as a family. So that is, it's, I thought that kind of experience gave, was a good preparation for a pretty, you know, for a rough and tumble world in politics. And I wanted to write about my sister and, you know, memorialize her a little on that experience, particularly for her children, but also to, for other people who, everybody's going to face, you know, it's very likely that you're going to face a situation with a family member with terminal illness, right? We all are going to have to deal with that. And I felt a lot of dread in that experience. And you just dread all of the stations of the cross, if you will, that you're going to go through with somebody with that disease in particular. Like, when is she going to have to stop working? When can she no longer drive? When are we going to have to take her keys from her? What's it going to be like when I step into her hospice room? And it just, dread can waste you and drain you of a lot of energy.
I was going to stop you for a sec just to say to you, the profound experience of reading this book, that you're going through what you're going through with something so major as this campaign,
yeah,
juxtaposed against, you know, your sister. I have to tell you, wow. I mean, lesser people or greater people than you would have fallen apart. Kudos to you. That's a lot.
I got good advice from Hillary about it, though, about just how you get through hard things. And she said, she doesn't get overwhelmed with the enormity of whatever the task is in front of her, and, or if it seems hopeless or, you know, but just does what the best that she can do with what's ahead of her that day, and then go to bed, get up and do it again.
Yeah. I love that. And that's what you did.
That's what I did. And what I found is everyone is stronger than they know, and you're strong enough. You were always strong enough to get through one day. And that's all you need to do. And if you can live with that certainty and understand that about yourself, and you really can get through anything. And that's how I mentioned the campaign.
You're listening to the Hallie Kasser-Jane Show. My guest today is Jennifer Palmieri, who served as head of communications for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign and White House communications director under President Barack Obama, whose new book, Madam President, is a must read. The Hallie Kasser-Jane Show posts new podcasts Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern at HallieKasserJane.com, and is available on all your favorite apps. Be sure to find the show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on your Alexa device. Interesting, you said you never intended Madam President to be a Hillary tell-all, but it is in many ways, because throughout the book you give extraordinary insight, like you just did, into her profound political instincts, her measured temperament, her humanity, her fortitude. Mm-hmm. So listen to me, we're such good girlfriends now, right? Tell me something more about Hillary. Maybe you didn't tell anybody in the book, because I got to go there if I didn't ask that question. Tell me something I don't know. They'll kill me. So I'm asking it. What didn't you put in there that you said, I'm not going to put that in there, but that gives us insight? Because I have a Hillary insight I can tell you about that I learned.
What's yours?
Well, I have a farm in Virginia, and I had all of her friends stop by to meet a horse of mine. Oh God, this was many, many years ago, through a friend. I got to know her friends. They were her college friends, and they were going to on their way to the White House. It was a crazy story that happened. And when I met them, I met Hillary. Now I know Mr. Clinton. I know him personally, but I've never met Hillary. So what I got is, she's a regular girl.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She is the thing that I think, you know, one thing that I didn't use in describing her that I think is part of the reason why people will find her guarded, is she is not someone, she's a politician who doesn't like the spotlight. And that's a really, that, yeah. is a hard deal.
Right.
That is not, you need to want the spotlight. And she is very happy, you know. Now, you know, her husband, for example, very comfortable in the spotlight. And right. He, you know, walks in a room and is in the center of attention. You know, that's not his favorite way to be. And with Hillary, she could care less. She is such a team player. And she's very happy to sit down and hear other people's ideas. I mean, she thrives on that. She thrives on input and pitching in to help where she's most needed. She's just one of the girls, and she's one of the girls with the real sense of duty that, you know, pushed her to do all these things and run for president. I think she entered the race with a lot of reluctance. She wasn't sure she was the, that this wouldn't, as she thought, I think she's the least surprised that she lost because she knows how the public and the press can react to her. But I think people don't get that about her. She's just wants to fix problems. I mean, she's really motivated by that. She's very concerned about the state of the world. She always has been. She's always been a fretter. She's real. She frets endlessly, just endlessly. One time I left my luggage on the boardwalk in Atlantic City, and I just happened to mention it, you know, saying like loud in the car. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I left my luggage sitting on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. So it's like, all right, well, you know, we have our staff, some of our staff stays behind. So I texted somebody after they get it. And then we got on the plane and I said, somebody texted me this. So they said, oh, good. Somebody got my luggage. And Hillary's like, oh, thank God. I was so worried about that. What are you doing? Worry about my, I'm not even worried about my luggage, but she's just a fretter. And she's just like, whatever the problem is, it's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to get Jennifer's luggage back? What are we going to do? And that's just like, you know, that's how she lives in the world.
That's
so her
amazing,
own,
yeah.
her own situation is not very prominent. It's not as big a concern as what's going on with others.
I think it's great. I have to bring up Trump, obviously. Crass, more a carnival barker than a politician, a man who would rather lie than tell the truth, a man who has no political background, a man who broke every rule of politics and then some. And is by all measures ruling as close to an authoritarian presidency as America has ever seen, who loves to divide and conquer. Looking back, before we look forward, was there any way to prep for him? There wasn't, was there?
I mean, I guess if we understood from March of 2015 when we got in that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee, I'm sure there are things that we would have done differently. The thing that it is, I would say it's that it's not as if we didn't understand that there is enormous disaffection in the country. And people were, you know, we saw that very, you could see that. And I saw that across the board with every demographic. And you saw a glimpse of that in every single state we went to. So, but what was hard was trying to reach, to be able to reach those people that were so frustrated. There was so little credibility that politicians, government had, people believing that any one president could actually make a difference. So, you know, we went to West Virginia, we went to Kentucky, we spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania, places that ended up voting for Trump. And it's by the time you're engaging with them as part of a presidential campaign, it was way too late. And in that case, the only option you had was to, you know, try and convince the people that are willing to listen about why she would be great and the dangers of a Trump presidency and motivate others that, you know, are inclined to be on her side to turn out. So that's what we ended up having to do. But it was very distressing. And the Clintons both saw it and were really despondent about that, how disaffected people in the country felt.
And then there's Comey and the emails and the absolute abject idiocy of it all.
Yep.
And the continued Hillary derangement syndrome that lives on Fox and Enemies, which is what I call it, Fox and Enemies.
last night, the rally he did yesterday, 90 minutes before he showed up, locker up chants are going strong.
It's just screwy lunacy. And we are out of control in this country on this issue. And I worry about what happens in 2020 because, you know,
I know,
it's a scary thing. So listen to me and the press.
Yes.
Did they not put him in office?
So I really hold them responsible for a lot here.
Good, because I did too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they treated her like they treated her like the incumbent from the beginning, and they thought that they were going to make her better. And I think they helped give rise to him by covering him the way that he did, and also not taking him seriously. And I really fault them for the way they covered emails. I think that, you know, the first woman, certainly this woman was destined to have some issue blow up as a proxy issue for dealing with her ambition. And I think emails was it, because at the root of that was suspicion of her motivation, suspicion that she was hiding something, justified merely by them being suspicious that she's been hiding something for a long time.
I think they wanted, I think they built her up to tear her down. To sell them.
They do a lot of that. But this is something different.
And more with women, too. Yeah.
They do it more with women. They do that with everybody, but they do that more with women. But this was something different. I really believe that, you know, because I would say to them, okay, what if Hillary had won in 2008? She was president. Obama was Secretary of State. He had presidential ambitions. He had a personal email account. Would you have all of these suspicions about him? Well, no. Well, why not? Well, she's always so sketchy. Yeah. She's always doing this. She's doing it again. She's always hiding something. What are you talking about? Well, Whitewater travel gate. What about Whitewater? What, you know, and it's just, she's, you know, and I would say, listen to what you are saying. She's doing it again. She's always so sketchy. This is just, it is justified on you being suspicious of her for decades, and there's nothing at the root of it. And I think that is the venue in which we wrestled with, you know, a woman's motivations, doing something out of the ordinary, trying to seek power. And what it felt to me, I said to them, was, you want her to confess. You're trying to beat some kind of confession out of her. And it felt like the witch trials, like that's how, you know, disturbing and deep stuff is.
I got to tell you, kiddo, guess what? That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And you know, it happened to Hillary. It's going to happen to the next one. They already don't, you know, they're doing it to Nancy Pelosi. They're playing the same game on her right now. And I'm watching everybody watch it. Nobody say anything about it. I'm saying it here.
Oh, they I say it.
Well, you and I, because I haven't seen this, but they're doing exactly the same playbook on her. You know, she's got an illness, obviously. I mean, it's just like,
I mean, it's
crazy.
And what makes me, the right wing is doing it to her. A lot of the press don't like her, and they can't really put their finger on it except to say, well, maybe it's not her fault, but she's become toxic.
Right. Right. Like, well, there we go.
Oh, great. Okay, right. Great. Yes, yes, yes. That was their goal. Right. So.
So it's a playbook that we need to change the script here. And I think everybody's got to really start paying attention to that now before it's too late. And who knows what comes up and who we, you know, we put up as Dems. I could talk to you forever, and I'm going to demand you come back soon. But
okay.
I want to finish on this. You say, yes. Madam Secretary, even when you lose, refuse to be defeated. Because this is a book not just about you and about Hillary, but for all women to learn from. Will the Dems put up a woman in 2020, Jennifer? And if they do, are you going to be part of the team that works to get her to the White House? Are you coming back?
I think multiple women will run in 2020, and I think they could be the nominee. And I don't know if I'm going to be part of it. I don't know if I'm going to be part of it or not. I'm not sure. But I've learned certainly not to rule anything out. So, when we first lost, people were saying, oh, well, that, you know, that was terrible. Obviously, women can't elect a Democrat again. And now I think there'll be multiple women running. I think that's great. And I think one of them could be the nominee. People said, after 16 that Democrats can't do. Oh, obviously you can't do that again. And now I think that if you look and see with all the women running, all the candidates that are running that are women, Me Too, the women's marches, this, you know, like, oh, it's going to, it has to be a woman. But I think, you know, there's like, there's four or five good,
I don't know if I will do it or not.
I can't tell what that's going to feel like, but I know I've learned not to rule anything out.
You don't blame yourself, I hope.
I don't.
And you address it in the book, and I really wanted to put that in there before we quit, because I think it's important what you said.
Yeah,
in the book.
I mean, it's funny. A lot of times women beat themselves up about things, and I, you know, someone did my share of that, but not here, because it was so clear to me that I knew I did everything I could. I put all my effort into this, and you know, it wasn't there, but I'm happy to say I don't have to live with that regret.
No, absolutely not. Listen, Jennifer, I have to say something to you. Very important, okay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. It's so nice of you. Thanks.
No, thank you. There should be more of you out there working to move all of this forward. And you've done a hell of a job. And you don't get enough credit for it, in my opinion. Thanks.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Jennifer Palmieri. Her new book is Madam President, available at fine bookstores everywhere. And now, a few words from me. Big girls do cry, and I am sobbing. I'm sobbing even mourning for what used to be a serious calling and is no longer politics. Who among us doesn't know this to be true? Only the fools. With the election of President Trump, our politics might have taken a fatal turn. It was a long time coming. Politics used to be about policy and politicians doing what's right for the people. It used to be about better men, rarely women, and the better angels of our nature. No more. Today, our politics isn't about policy. Policy has been replaced by rabid ideology. It is the fringe of both parties that has managed to gain control of our conversation. Angry ideologues with way too much certitude in what they believe, immovable, intractable, blowhards, gotcha-type personalities for whom compromise is a dirty word. These people didn't travel to Washington to serve we, the people. They went to Washington to serve themselves and line their pockets and to live the good life on the people's dole. Think Secretary of Commerce Steve Mnuchin spending $1 million worth of taxpayers' money to avoid flying commercial airlines when he has more money than God. Or think former Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, forced to resign under pressure after racking up at least $400,000 in travel bills for chartered flights and undermining President Trump's promise to drain the swamp of a corrupt and entitled capital. Or how about the fact that Department of Housing and Urban Development officials spent $31,000 on a new dining room set for Secretary Ben Carson's office in late 2017, just as the White House circulated its plan to slash HUD's programs for the homeless, elderly, and poor? Carson said his wife did it. By the way, Carson is a sleazebag. Just saying, no angel here. And then, of course, there's President Donald Trump, who as candidate promised to divest himself or walk away from his business while in office, and didn't. Trump's businesses are benefiting from his family being in power, including his resorts like Mar-a-Lago and his D.C. hotel. Trump is using his position as president to promote his own business interests that include his numerous trips to his own resorts and properties, like those in New Jersey and Florida, while charging Secret Service and transportation costs to the taxpayers. He also continues to sell merchandise. Foreign dignitaries are herded to Trump's D.C. hotel, and Trump wine is even being promoted from and by the White House. Even Ivanka Trump merchandise has been unethically promoted by the administration. Do I dare introduce Russia into my little diatribe or Stormy Daniels? It's not just the president and the cabinet members that I call to task. It's Congress, too, who are raping the American treasury at every turn. Think the outrageous Trump tax reform bill, and I put that in quotes, tax reform, tax cuts that made the rich richer and gave crumbs to the poor and put the American deficit into schisms. Now Team Trump wants to pay for those tax cuts by cutting programs like CHIP, SNAP, Food for the Poor, cut Medicaid and Medicare, which speaks to something far worse than out-of-control ideology and greed. Compassion has been replaced by cruelty and hate, a topic we'll be addressing on the Hallie Castor-Jane Show next week. My guest is one of the leading voices of progressive politics and the author of The Opposite of Hate, Sally Cohn. But this week, I want to stay focused on the personalities who are running Washington these days and about the voters who are picking the inmates who are running the asylum. Folks, you've allowed yourselves to be duped. Yes, you have. You went for the glitter rather than the gold when you voted for Donald Trump. You weren't interested in a policy wonk. You, like the politicians you've been sending to Washington, chose money over morality, ideology, not policy, over we, the people. We being at the very, very core of this republic. And worse, as many of you are learning too late, allowed the money grabbers to convince you that they had your interest at heart when they had only their own. Hillary Clinton, the policy wonk, boring, dull. You were told to hate her shrill voice. You were convinced that although years of investigation proved no wrongdoing on her part or that she was on the government's dole, the woman who worked tirelessly over a lifetime for your children, who actually founded CHIP that Republicans want to defund, who understood that affordable health care was critical not only to Americans' longevity, but their pocketbooks as well, this woman, so many, including women, found threatening, whom your leaders continued to beat up because it gins you up, might have saved us the debacle that we find ourselves in now, if only Hillary Clinton hadn't been a woman. It's enough to make this woman cry. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Hallie Castor-Jane Show, a production of RESEC LLC. Be sure to tune in Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, when new podcasts are posted at HallieCastorJane.com and available wherever you like most to listen to your podcasts. Like my commentary? Don't? Have a thought or two you'd like to share with me? I want to hear from you. You can always connect with me at HallieCastorJane.com. We have an active group on Facebook, the Hallie Castor-Jane Show podcast. You can join me there as well. So, until next time, this is Hallie Castor-Jane.